Hello and welcome back to Sounding It Out, a podcast dedicated to audiology and hearing health, brought to you by Signia UK and Ireland. I'm Julia Van Hastien, your host and head of audiology at Signia. These podcasts are Signia neutral so that everybody with an interest in hearing health or audiology can benefit. This is the second episode of a mini-series about dementia and hearing and hearing loss, which we are launching weekly during the International Alzheimer's Month. Our guest speaker for the series is the internationally acclaimed Dr. Barbara Weinstein, an author in the field of geriatric audiology many times over, with specific research interests in dementia and social isolation, person-centered care and quantification of patient-reported outcomes. During our first episode, Dr. Weinstein introduced dementia and its overlap with hearing. We heard about some differences and overlaps between dementia and normal aging, and some evidence about the link between age-related hearing loss and dementia. During this episode, Dr. Weinstein and I will talk about the audiologist's responsibility in the prevention and treatment of dementia, focusing specifically on what we can do in the here and now. And in our last episode, we will do a deeper dive into the audiologist's rehabilitative role. Dr. Weinstein, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
We ended our first episode with your initial thoughts on the responsibility of audiologists for the prevention and treatment of dementia. You mentioned that audiologists play an important role as members of a professional multidisciplinary team to help people age well. Can you expand on that statement for our listeners, please?
Sure. From a public health perspective, a priority as for age is a healthy lifespan. Namely living a long life uncomplicated by damage from the environment, and lifestyle helps. And health professionals working with older adults should be committed to helping their patients thrive and live better with more healthy years and fewer sick years. And we know that as people are living longer, they're living longer with hearing loss. So it's really kind of important that we encourage earlier intervention of hearing loss. And it's also important that we end up being involved in as part of a healthcare, interprofessional healthcare teams. The World Health Organization suggests that health professionals, namely audiologists, should support healthy aging by gaining familiarity with and addressing the chronic conditions which interfere with selected domains of function, such as mobility and visual status, hearing capacity, and cognitive capacity, so that we should inquire about all these functions, which are modifiable risk factors, and hearing is critical and linked to each of these different factors. So we shouldn't only just be concentrating on the technology. We should concentrate on how people can live healthy lives with the technology as an adjunct to living a healthier and a life well lived. And brain health, of course, is critical, and healthy hearing is critical to brain health. Hearing wellness, I should say, is critical to brain health.
Now, in that answer, you mentioned modifiable risk factors, and of course, hearing loss is one of those and one of the strongest modifiable risk factors, as we've heard. But this means that hearing loss needs to be treating in the first instance. It can only be modifiable if we actually treat the hearing loss. But untreated age-related hearing loss is really prevalent. Do you have any insights or any stats on why that is?
Well, what's interesting is that hearing loss is considered a normal part of aging. And hearing loss is stigmatized. Hearing aids are stigmatized. So by providing hearing aids to people which are hidden, we're further stigmatizing hearing loss. What's interesting is since the hearing loss was identified as a modifiable risk factor, the UK Alzheimer's Disease Association has created an amazing app. It's called a Brain Health Check-In. And what they do is by going into this app, they ask about different lifestyle or modifiable risk factors to get people to attend to these. So they're bringing attention to the modifiable risk factors, and hearing is the third or fourth modifiable risk factor that they talk about on that they check in for on this app. And they're encouraging people to get the hearing tested. And in in there, in this app, they talk about why hearing is important. So now that we have, it's kind of like a public health announcement, and we need more of these to bring hearing loss into more into the consciousness of people. And I think that that is happening. But it's so instead of maybe possibly talking about hearing loss, talking about hearing wellness is putting a different kind of a tinge on things. So I think that as hearing loss becomes less stigmatized and hearing is more better associated with communication and brain health and engagement, hopefully this will make a difference in terms of reducing some of the stigma of hearing loss.
Yeah, and I think you actually touched on a very important point there, and that's the stigma. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why it can take sometimes between 7 and 10 years before somebody acknowledge that they've got hearing difficulties and then take that next step towards doing something about that. So I think that's why, that's one of the biggest reasons we're seeing this delay. So here is where I see audiologists can play a part in, you know, the prevention and treatment of dementia. And that's about educating and changing perceptions about hearing loss. How do we go about informing individuals about hearing being a modifiable risk factor without the risk of it being perceived as scaremongering? So we don't want people to be scared into adopting hearing aids. It needs to be something that they want to do out of choice rather than us being audiologists that tells them you've got to do this, otherwise you put yourself at risk for dementia in the end.
Well, I think the primary care professionals have a lot to do with this. And I think that we don't work enough with primary care, and primary care doctors really don't know about the value of the services that audiologists offer. And I think one of the reasons is that we don't connect what we do with how people live. And we don't connect with the fact that the cost of hearing loss. So if more people recognize that people who have hearing loss have poor physical health, poor cognitive health, more hospital readmissions, are greater risk for falls. If we have to more hospital readmissions, we have to communicate this to doctors. We have to get this out to physicians, and we have to get that out to the general public. But I think the fact that hearing is now recognized as this modifiable risk factor, this is our opportunity. And I think that when we do counsel our patient and we send reports out, I think that what we should do is talk about, well, our patient got a hearing aid, and the hearing aid is really making a difference in their lives. They're more socially engaged. It's better for them. They're less isolated. And doctors really care about isolation because they know how significant it is. And we don't really connect what we do to people's lifestyle. Physicians will hear the negatives about hearing aids, but they're not going to hear the positives. So we have to do a better job, I think, of communicating this.
And that takes it back to a previous point you made about there being a very big focus on the technology. You know, the physicians are just interested in potentially hearing about the hearing tests that we've done, the audiogram that we've done, the emittance measurements that we've done, and how that what's on the report when that comes back to us. But actually, we've got a responsibility that extends beyond that to bring the person back into the conversation, bringing it back to the patient-centered or person-centered care approach, and making the conversation about lifestyle improvements. Because we know that loneliness has negative effects on morbidity and mortality, and that is a conversation that GPs or physicians are interested in. Now, taking that educational piece even further, the connections between that we've been talking about between cognitive difficulties and hearing status and our professional role as gatekeepers has had some conversations within the audiological realm, and things that people wonder about or discuss amongst each other is it within our scope of practice to screen selected patients to identify people with at the risk of mild cognitive impairment and or dementia? Another thing that people are discussing is, should we test hearing status as audiologists before cognitive evaluation? So those are just some of the conversations that we're having where people are wondering about the boundaries. What should we do? What shouldn't we do? Where do we draw the line?
It's an important question. And I think that what is key is that there are certain competencies audiologists must have before they're going to embark on doing actual screening. And one thing that the audiologists should be aware of is that U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, a Canadian organization, recommend against screening people who do not have any symptoms or asymptomatic, and they recommend against screening people who are not at risk. So at this point, given the fact that audiologists are not really, don't have an in-depth understanding of dementia, we need more to learn more about it. And given the fact that screening is not exactly recommended, it's important that we observe behaviors of our patients. And that's, so we have to do behavioral observation and recognize behaviors, because theoretically we're seeing people on an ongoing basis. And we see them over time, and we could see changes in behavior. We have to be able to pick those up. For example, if we notice that a patient is regularly reporting late, all of a sudden they were always on time, and all of a sudden they seem to be late for an appointment. Or if they seem to be asking the same question over and over again, for example, not remembering what you said. If they have difficulty kind of processing or mishearing what you've said, even though they have normal peripheral hearing, that's a sign, because sometimes people with different types of dementia, they have normal peripheral, but they're not really processing correctly what you're saying. Difficulty following directions. These are all behavioral signs that would suggest to us, well, maybe there's been a change in behavior. And it's important to ask about memory. Have you noticed any change in memory, and having family members there? And to me, that's the screening we should do until we know more about dementia. And then the natural thing to do would be refer patients to primary care doctors. If we're going to get into the business of screening, we have to have referral sources. We have to have relationships with other professionals. There has to be a give and take. And I think down the pike, this will happen. But UK, Australia, Canada, there are a lot of professional organizations educating about dementia. But when I go and speak about dementia throughout the world, and I ask how many people have heard of the Lancet Commission report, most still have not heard of that. So we have a long way to go before we're educated enough to say, okay, screening is should be a part of our scope of practice.
So what I'm hearing there is being aware of the red flags to be looking out for, and also that we need to understand what we know and what we don't know. So we've got to get ourselves as audiologists educated too. For me, identifying a lot of those red flags, yes, it will happen during our appointments if we see people executively. But actually, taking a really strong case history is also a really good starting point. How do we modify our case histories for these elderly patients, maybe 70 plus, that comes into our clinic, as a good starting point looking out for some red flags?
Well, the first start when we're doing a case history is making sure that the patients can understand you when you're taking a case history. So I think it's very, very important that we practice good hearing healthcare and we optimize audibility. So, for example, if somebody has a hearing aid, make sure they're wearing it, make sure that the batteries are working, make sure the volume is up. And then if we don't have that, I think we should use a personal amplifier. And I think we should ask an open-ended question just to open up the conversation, and we should listen to what the patient says. A lot of the work out of Australia, Louise Hickson and her colleagues, Beck Bennett, they suggest that we spend more time talking and not listening to the patient. And if we listen to the patient and their descriptions of things, we'll learn a lot. We'll learn about their functioning. And if we naturally observe their behaviors, we'll learn a lot. It's really, really important that we get beyond asking about only ear-related things. We have to be holistic. So we should ask about falls. We should ask about memory. We should ask about vision. All that matters in terms of the testing that we do. It all matters in terms of the counseling we do when, for example, we're fitting people with hearing aids. We have to get beyond the ear. We have to take a more generalized, holistic approach to our patients to learn more about the patient. And if we spend more time talking and developing a rapport, in my opinion, the case history is as much about a rapport building for person-centered care as it is about getting the history. And once the patient feels comfortable, they'll open up some conversations. So I think we really have to work on that and being less prescriptive mm-hmm. when we're doing a history.
Some really good pointers there. And actually, from listening to you there, I was thinking that many of those questions and the approach to those questions really can and should be asked by each professional that the elderly patient sees. It doesn't have to just be us that ask those questions. And that brings us back to the multidisciplinary approach that we talked about earlier and that we keep going back to, because everything links into the patient-centered care and multidisciplinary. Now, given that often that primary care physicians and nurse practitioners are actually least likely to be involved in the diagnosis of both hearing loss and dementia, are there any easy tools or simple tools, quick screening tools that could highlight potential red flags for either or both, something that we can educate these individuals, these professionals with maybe?
So do you mean educate primary care doctors? Mm. Well, I think it's really, really important that primary care doctors are aware of, are made aware when a patient has a hearing loss. So I think one of our responsibilities as audiologists is counseling about self-advocacy. So when our patients are given hearing aids, we have to talk to them about self-advocating. We have to talk to them about raising awareness of physicians about the role of hearing and how important it is for them to hear when they're interacting, because we have not been successful as audiologists in educating primary care doctors. And perhaps the best way is if they listen to the patients. So we want to suggest to our patient and say, I have a hearing loss. I'm wearing hearing aids. Can you please not look at the computer when you're talking to me? Please look at me. That the window is open. It's a little noisy. Can you please close the window? If we educate our patients to be more advocates for themselves, I think maybe doctors will get the message. Also, there's more and more literature in the medical journals talking about the costs of hearing loss and the fact that people who have hearing loss are less activated. They don't take care of their health as much as people who are not hearing impaired. So we have to get that information, of course. But doctors are interested in frailty. They're interested in isolation because they know it compromises long life. So we have to make sure to get that message across that people are wearing our devices, they're more engaged, and they're healthier. The other thing I have to say is that it's really, really important that with our older patients that we say to them, if you have a hearing aid, bring it to the hospital. I think that in England, there's a movement where you give them a case where to put the hearing aids for it safer. In the United States, patients are encouraged not to bring the hearing aids to the hospital. The hospitals are afraid of liability. But it's really, really important that patients are told to bring it, because delirium, if they come out of anesthesia and they're not able to hear, there's delirium. So there's a lot of patient education we have to do, and in turn, they can educate the physicians and nurse practitioners, of course.
And previously, we've also talked about the fact that individuals can get so obsessed with what's on an audiogram as opposed to listening to how a person perceived their hearing to be. There are actually ways of identifying whether you should be worried about somebody's hearing without performing a hearing test.
Right. So what's interesting is that there's now a debate, at least in the United States, between what the best metric is for identifying for hearing loss. So how do we know if somebody has a hearing loss? What's the signal for somebody, for example, getting hearing aids? And we know that people can have normal audiograms, normal peripheral hearing loss, but have communication difficulties, difficulty understanding speech and noise. So the audiogram only tells us about the periphery. So we have to make sure to get beyond the periphery, because about 12% of people have hidden hearing loss, which is not going to show up in the audiogram. So that, for example, speech and noise tests or completing a self-report inventory, which captures central auditory processing as well. So I'm going to give away a little secret here. I didn't tell you this, Julia, but from my personal experience, I mean, it says this. You talk about how you people are experts. I became an expert because I did a lot of reading. But tragically, my young husband, who's 73, was just diagnosed with dementia. And what was an interesting, and he's a very, very bright man, But what's interesting to me is like, I don't understand. You have normal hearing. I know you have normal peripheral hearing, but you're not hearing, you're not understanding what I'm saying. You're mishearing. And that was like a dead giveaway because he was totally misperceiving exactly what I knew he heard because I know he has normal hearing. So the audiogram is just not enough. The basic audiogram is not enough. So we have to do speech and noise, and we have to ask people to self-report. And we know from the literature that self-reported hearing loss is more indicative of dementia versus the audiogram. So that's a just study that just came out from Mayo Clinic, that the audiogram is associated with cognitive dysfunction, but a self-report of hearing difficulty is associated with decline in dementia. And subjective hearing loss is associated more with subjective cognitive decline. So the perception of our patient and family members is really important, and we have to listen to our patients.
All I can say is that your husband is in the best capable hands for the job. So again, just coming back to cognition, I found during my research for our chat today a toolkit from the Alzheimer's Association that maybe could be used in primary care settings, amongst other things. This toolkit, there are two validated assessment tools, the General Practitioner's Assessment of Cognition and the MiniCOG. Now, from my understanding, and I've never actually performed these tools, but I understand that they can take 5 minutes or less. Let's say our case history highlights some of these red flags we've been talking about today. Do you see it appropriate that an audiologist administer these, or should we mainly educate our physicians to perform these?
Right. So, interestingly, I was doing a workshop in Australia on screening, and I created a case, and I went over the MiniCOG with people. But before I did that, I was trained in the MiniCOG with a geriatric physician that I work with. There's a lot that goes into screening. You have to kickstart a conversation. The scoring is not that difficult, but then what you share with the patient, that's really complicated. So you have to have training before you do any of this. So if you're trained and if you have referral agencies and you know about dementia, I could see it. The MiniCOG meets a lot of the criterion for a good screening test. It's quick and easy to administer, 5 to 10 minutes. It doesn't cost anything. It's reliable and it's valid. And also the assessment, the memory impairment screen or the other tool that you mentioned, those are also meet the criterion for good screening tests, reliability and validity. But before we engage in any screening, make sure that the person, if there's no risk factor, we shouldn't be doing it. And if they're asymptomatic, but we have to know more about dementia, we have to know how to talk about it, and then we have to have places to refer patients before we refer. The hardest thing is to explain to the patients what the results are. And they're going to say to you, why are you doing this cognitive screen? And you could relate it. You could say, well, in order for me to do speech testing, it's memory is part of that. And for me to teach you how to use a hearing aid or a cochlear implant, memory is important. So it's more important that I get at memory. But there's the limitation to some of these questionnaires is that they assess memory. And in different types of dementia, the memory is not going to be affected, but more judgment, more processing is a problem. So you're going to miss, we'll miss people.
Very interesting. So coming back to that point that actually you should really know what your scope of practice is and what you know, basically, and what you don't know. Now, I want to just, with the last few questions, I just want to go back to bring it back to some core things that we can do as audiologists in the here and now. Let's start with some really practical tips for people listening on how to communicate with people with dementia. I know we've highlighted that we need to know that they are able to hear us. So whether that's with the hearing aids or with, personal amplification. But other than that, when we think more generally about communication tips, how should we be communicating?
So as we know, masking is going to be an issue. So without the mask, with the mask. So we want to make sure to look at the person, and we want to make sure that the patient can see our face, can see our eyes. If they can't see our lips with the mask, as long as they could see our eyes and some of our emotions. That's really, really important. Very, very important of all things is to get the patient's attention. Make sure the person is attending to you. Make sure you talk one at a time. Because if you have multiple people speaking, people with hearing loss are going to have difficulty. People with hearing loss and dementia, they're going to have divided attention, and that's going to be much of a problem. You want to also remove any kind of auditory distractions like noise. You want to remove any kind of visual distraction so that the patients are focused. And of course, you don't want to exaggerate your speech, but you want to speak slowly. And you want to also make sure that they understand. So you could say, just as a check, you're not checking on them. You want to make sure that you're understood. So you want to make sure, do you understand how they understood what I said? For example, say, okay, so now you're going to go home to your wife. Let's just review what I've said so that you can, I make sure that you're communicating, and you want to always give written information. The other thing that's really, really important is when you're scheduling your patient to come in for an appointment, it's important to write everything down, where to go, what time, important to have a family member accompanying the patient. And you want to make sure to schedule the appointment at a time that's the right time for the patient. I mean, scheduling an appointment for an older person, especially somebody who might have dementia at 8 a.m., that's just not going to work. That takes a long time to move. It takes longer to get to places. And you have to make sure things are scheduled that's convenient for them. But you want to make sure, again, to give written information, always have a family member, and also try to make sure to provide a context for conversation. Those are just a couple of thoughts off the top of my head.
Well, some really good pointers. Thank you. We've talked about communication tips. We talked about audibility being important. We've talked about promoting social interactions and the holistic approach. But let's go back to something that audiologists might perceive their bread and butter, and that's hearing assessments. We obviously need to have a fairly accurate idea of somebody's hearing loss in order to prescribe a hearing test. Is there any modifications that we could do to help assess somebody's hearing when they've got dementia? What can we do to make it easier?
So what's interesting is there have been a few studies to see whether or not people with dementia can be tested. And for sure, if there's a milder kind of dementia, you can definitely test hearing reliably and pure tones reliably. You have to understand why you want to understand their hearing status. So in my view, it's important to understand hearing impairment, whether or not a hearing impairment exists. But you don't have to necessarily do a full audiogram because people with dementia will be fatigued. So you want to, for example, like you test children, you want to get a low frequency, you want to get a mid frequency, you want to get a higher frequency, but you also want to do functional testing. You want to do monosyllabic word testing. That's not as meaningful as function. So ask questions in terms of asking them to raise an arm or can you do this? So rather than doing monosyllabic, change your mode of testing to trying to get at their functional abilities, because that is going to inform what you do, and that's going to be kind of important in terms of the counseling that you're going to do. Self-report for people with mild, moderate dementia, they'll tell you how they feel. But people with more severe dementia, that's not going to work. And that's what you have to always bring the family member. And you want the family member to report what they see. What's interesting about dementia is that a lot of times people with dementia don't realize that they have it and their judgment can be off. So it's really, really important that you always bring a family member in if you're going to talk about making recommendations for any kind of intervention. And the family member is an important facilitator and could be a barrier if they're not familiar. So it's really, really important to engage a family member at all steps of the way and just make that test practical. We can test the hearing. Speech pathologists working in long-term care facilities should know that you can refer patients for hearing tests. Another thing that I do oftentimes is I will use a personal amplifier and I will ask the patient, is it okay if I put this on when I'm talking to them? And I'll see a difference in their behavior. I'll see the reaction. So that's going to tell me right away if there's a difference with and without a personal amplifier. That's a quick way for me to get a feel for hearing status.
Mm-hmm. The quickest way, really.
Yeah.
Many thanks to you, Barbara, for talking about prevention and treatment and what we can do in the here and now today. I've, again, learned a lot and can really see how important the multidisciplinary approach is when it comes to working with somebody with dementia. The audiologist can often be the first personal professional that may observe some behavioural changes over time, and it is good to know what we should include in our red flags for onwards referral. For example, you mentioned falls, and that is something that I would definitely include in my case history moving forward.
And vision. Don't forget vision.
Don't forget vision. But I do feel that we still have a long way to go about educating on the link between brain health, social well-being and hearing. So hopefully we can get as many people listening to this podcast as possible. In the next episode, we will take a closer look at the audiologist's rehabilitative role for the individuals with hearing loss and dementia. If you are interested in any further information on the topic, the Alzheimer's Society website at alzheimers.org.uk is a great resource. If you found any of what you've heard today helpful, please tell your friends, family and colleagues so as many people as possible can share the knowledge. And if there's a topic you think we should be covering, drop us an email to the address on the show page. And remember to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from so you don't miss an episode. This is a Fresh Air production by Annie Day for Signia UK and Ireland. Until next time, goodbye.